Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Atlantic Bushcraft Adventures. Tonight we are on episode 221, or at least I think we are, after very loosely checking and questioning my sheet of chicken math. And anyway, we're going to talk a little bit about fire safety tonight. And one of the big reasons that I was really on board with this is because everything that's going on here over in Nova Scotia. But it was actually your idea there, Ben, so why don't you tell us what you were thinking?
Well, honestly, it is everything that's going on over there, but there's forest fires over here too. So it's not like you're the only ones, but like, I don't watch a ton of the news sometimes. So sometimes when news comes, it comes really fast for me. And all of a sudden, it just seemed like everyone was talking about the fact that Nova Scotia is basically on fire right now and not in a good way. So there's a few things I wanted to capture. And one of them is like, how to have a fire safely and how to prevent things from catching on fire. But the other thing is what to do if you get into a situation where there is fire, or it does cut you off from your route of escape and stuff like that. So, you know, overall, when fire is involved, what can we do to be as safe as possible? Because, you know, right now, had somebody been into certain parts of the woods, it might mean that the only way they know to get out is through the fire. So now what do you have to do? How do you stay safe? How do you get around, through, or over, or an alternate route? So there's a lot that we can unpack here, and by no means will this be an all-encompassing breakdown, but I think it's a really good place to start for people to kind of get a feeling for what's going on. So yeah, that's kind of where I wanted to start with.
Let's see, Chris Lovelace. Great topic today. I just got done arguing with my buddy about his illegal fire starting during the fire bans. My buddy thinks because he's so skilled with intellect that he would never cause a wildfire. And I guess seeing this is the first comment up there, I'm going to state an observation. And this is simply just an observation. I'm not profiling in any way, shape, or form. However, since the forest fires have started here in Nova Scotia, and I guess just a very quick summary on that for some of our viewers or listeners that aren't familiar with what's going on. Nova Scotia right now is going through probably the worst spell of forest fires in recorded history for Nova Scotia. One of the fires has just surpassed the largest fires in recorded history for Nova Scotia. And one of the other fires has surpassed the highest costing amount of damage in recorded Nova Scotia history, the previous one being Porter's Lake Fire or Spryfield Fire. I can't remember which one, though sometimes get combined, so I didn't look at all the statistics. But anyway, the one that's ripping through Tintowan right now, there's like over 200 homes lost or damaged, thousands of people displaced and evacuated, and it's continuing to, you know, do its thing and eat up more buildings and cause more damage. The one down in Shelburne, I think it's over 13,000 hectare now, if I remember correctly. Like, it is now the largest fire that's ever happened in Nova Scotia that's been on record. And for a little province, we're not really equipped to handle fires that size, as well as larger provinces that are used to dealing with this. So it's hitting us quite drastically, honestly. But anyway, since this has all started with the fire service, we've been getting called out to talk about, you know, or not talk about, to try and put out people's campfires and things like that, because there is a 100% burn ban in effect right now. Like, you can't burn anything. You can't burn in a fire pit. You can't have a campfire. You can't have a chimney outside. You can't set anything on fire, or the fine started around $25,000 they just released today, that they upped them simply to try and deter people from creating fires. However, on that note, you know, there is a little grace. Fire departments go around telling people to put it out. And there's two main demographics that I'm finding with this. You get the older folks, and I don't mean like old as in senior citizens. I just mean the people that have been around the block a few more times. And generally their thing is, I've been around long enough and I'm skilled enough that my fire is not going to get out of control. And then the second group is you get the younger people, who is, I'm 10 feet tall and built like a brick poop house, and I can put out anything even if it does get out of control. And then everybody in between that is kind of listening to what's going on. It's just, it's kind of one of those weird and wacky things. And I don't know if that's the same everywhere when this kind of thing happens, or if it's just unique to our area, but it was kind of an interesting thing that I've observed since this has all started.
Yeah, no, I can see that. I can see that with some things. Anyone who thinks they're too good to potentially accidentally catch something on fire, and I have not caused anything like this, but I've known firefighters who have accidentally caused fires to happen and had significant damage to it. I have known experts who have had similar things. So, like, you know, it doesn't take a lot for something to get out of hand, and it usually is pretty quick, pretty innocent. When things are wet and miserable, it might take a bit more effort to get something to burn. But when things are dry, like you're describing right now, getting something to light on fire is actually more difficult to not have happen. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't take too many things. A broken piece of glass could start the fire, right?
Oh, you don't, like, in the statistics of what sets fires off, there's actually a category for glass in the woods. Just the sun hits it the right way and it creates fires.
Yeah. I seen somebody the other day, they just took a water bottle, a plastic water bottle with water in it, and held it over a piece of paper and burned a hole through it with the sun hitting it just right. I think it was last year, I was home and I was at my mother's place, and I noticed some smoke coming off a rag in her yard. And I went over and checked, and it was exactly that. There was a wine glass or something sitting on a table, and the light through it was focused just on that rag. And it was freaky. Like, I'm sure it, you know, that combination, there's been there dozens of times.
And weird things happen. Like, the sun has a lot of potential energy.
Yeah. So, you know, it doesn't take a ton to get a fire going when the conditions are right for a fire to go. I think you said something earlier, and we can sort of mention this even, like, ATVs, exhaust, can start a fire, especially a bit of grass or something gets built up around it. A bit of dirt and mud gets stuffed up there. That dries out. Next thing you got flammable material there, and you get a small fire. And you might not notice it. It might flick off, goes into the woods, and next thing you know, it smolders there for 2-3 hours before it becomes a problem. You may never know that it was you that caused that fire. Cigarette butts. I mean, there's a whole section in the fire book on cigarette butts. I know there is. You know, people going in for a cigarette, put the cigarette out, think it's out, walk away. Just the right breeze hits that ember, a leaf catches, next thing you know, it's off. So, yeah, fire can start quite easily.
And so, the big thing is, even after it starts, like, how easy it is to start aside, that's a major factor, not taking anything away from that, don't misunderstand. But aside from that as well, it's how fast that can grow. Chris here in the comments said he had a fire incident once last September, had a twig stove, blew over, started a small fire, but he had water there to put it out and everything was good. The problem is here that the fires are literally exploding in size because of how dry things are and how high the winds have been. The fire in Tintown has just been released here in the last day. Was originally noticed by some roofers, and in the amount of time it pretty much took them to get down off the roof to start warning neighbors, it had already basically erupted into something that was not going to be put out unless you had specialized equipment. And then by the time they got the neighbors notified and notified the authorities, it was beyond the size that was able to be controlled even with specialized equipment, and they were into full-on forest fire mode. And then, of course, it just ripped through, and now it's massive and everything else. But, I mean, we're talking literally just minutes from the incipient stage when that fire originally originated, for whatever reason it is, still pending investigation, to growing to literally 60 feet flames.
Yeah. So let's start a little bit about what you can do to prevent forest fires start with. And one of the things, let's just, because we mentioned ATVs, believe it or not, keeping your ATV fairly clean and in good working order, making sure the exhaust is proper and correct. Those means that limits the amount of potential for that to start fire. So if it's covered in mud and dirt and grass and stuff sticking around, same thing with your lawnmower. Believe it or not, lawnmowers can cause fires. You know, the dry grass gets blown around, gets all around the engine, it heats up. I have seen blackened grass on my mower just from doing the yard. So it doesn't take much. So anything that gets hot, like a stove, an engine, you know, make sure you're taking care of it, you're treating it properly. Keep it away from dry tinder.
You want to know an interesting thing? When I worked for Natural Resources, we went to a fire that was caused by a porter in the woods, had chains on it for grip, and it just struck a rock, created a spark, everything was dry, got into some moss, we had a forest fire, and it ended up being 30 or 40 hectare too, which is, you know, nothing compared to these ones, don't get me wrong, but that's still a pretty big fire, all in all.
Yeah, I mean, the damage of a fire that size, I mean, the amount of wildlife that will die in a fire like that, that doesn't get away, the amount of trees and forest lands and stuff that are just cleared out that was potential income for probably hundreds of people, it will take 30, 50, 60 years for there to be decent sized trees on that land again. Like, it's not next year you go back and it's perfectly fine. You know, in 2 or 3 years, you'll probably have 6-7 foot trees there. But
well, let's think. Porter's Lake Fire was 2013. So what's that, 10 years now?
Yeah.
You can drive by Porter's Lake and very actively know that a forest fire had gone through there. Trees have still not grown back properly. There's still a lot of scorching. There's a lot of vegetation that hasn't returned. There's a lot of new vegetation, too, that, you know, thrives in burnt over areas. Not, you know, not taken away from that, but it's not the way it was before the fire, and it won't be for a very long time, like you said. So yeah, just something here that Danny mentioned. He had heard that compost decomposing forest debris can create fires, and actually that's a super good point. It's not so much a preventative measure that we can take on our own, because, as you know, we can't actively monitor the forest like that, but basically anything that's organic and it's decomposing generates heat. What you get is spontaneous combustion or self-generating combustion, whichever way you want to call it. You can get this literally just from like having oily rags that has animal fat or something on it. You ball it up, throw it in the corner. There's been cases where that has caught on fire, usually when it goes through the dryer or something like that. But more specifically, tight compacted grasses, which a lot of us happen to take for fire tinders, more readily popular as hay bales. You get a little moisture in that, it starts to rot from the inside. I can't count how many fires I've been to where we're pulling apart hay bales because they started spontaneously combusting. Usually they smolder and smoke starts pouring out of them. But then as you're tearing them apart, they get that sudden rush of wind, and then you get these massive flames that shoot up, and it's pretty impressive. But I mean, small scale, if you did have a tinder bag or something like that and you had some organic matter in there, like dried grasses that maybe still had a little bit of moisture into them, and you stuffed them down there pretty hard and kept it all compacted up, there is a chance that could potentially spontaneously combust or start self-combusting. Because it's not really spontaneous. It's a process. But, yeah, it is something that's very true, Danny. And it's something that we can actively watch out for ourselves. Not so much while we're in the woods, like I said, unless you carry a tinder bundle like that. But while you're doing your home projects, if you're making something like iron cloth, where you're using, you know, mineral spirits and linseed oil. Linseed oil is organic. They tell you right away, like, you have to leave your tarp air out for a month or more, simply because if you fold it up and tuck in a bag, there's a chance it could spontaneously combust. So if you recently made a tarp like that, or you're coating some of your axe handles or knife handles or whatever in walnut oil, linseed oil, whatever your oil of choice happens to be, and then you're taking that rag, you're balling up and jamming it in your backpack, that's still a problem. So these are things that you can watch for on the spontaneous combustion side of things, Danny, and I hope that answered your question a little bit.
Yeah. So that's a bit about how easy it is to start a fire, I guess. Let's, I guess, touch a tiny bit on, if you have to have a fire, what are the things you want to start to do? And right now, we cannot emphasize this enough. Do not have a fire in Nova Scotia.
But you're not even allowed in the woods in Nova Scotia right now. They just banned that as of today.
But when you are, it is best that your fire is not on duff. You want to have it on mineral soil or rock if you can. So if you could have it on a piece of bedrock and away from anything flammable, that is obviously pretty well ideal.
One thing I'd like to say on this that a lot of people have done is they'll go into an area where it's mossy and they'll scrape the moss back and they'll get down to dirt and they'll say, oh, I'll make my fire there, which is better than building it on the moss. However, be aware in the conditions that we have like now, and this is common to get out in Alberta and the boreal forests in Ontario and things like that, as it dries out, potentially you could start an underground fire if the roots and stuff are dry, and that can travel for a long way and then poke up in other spots. Once again, I'm going to reference a fire from Natural Resources, and I apologize if it sounds like a broken record, but this is where I gained a lot of my knowledge on this stuff. Out towards Waverly, outside Halifax County, we were fighting a fire there, and the fire burnt underground and would start popping back up to 30 and 50 feet away.
Yeah. And I have been told that those fires can sometimes lay dormant for weeks.
Or longer. There's mines and sawdust piles that have been burning for like 10 years. You know, Silent Hill, the video game, the movie, all that, that's based on kind of loosely a true story, minus all the horror. There's a mining town that started burning and it's still burning to this day because it's all burning underground.
Yeah. So, I mean, there was one years ago, I can't remember if it was Newfoundland or not, but that was an issue. Like the fire came and it, like you said, it slowly, they were able to, I guess, track it somehow, but eventually they figured out this thing was slowly burning underground, following the root structure, and it would pop up randomly, you know, weeks and weeks later. So they can be very hard to put out, and this is why now a lot of fire departments, especially in the woods, will have, you know, thermal imaging, so they can go in and look for hot spots that aren't easily visible or noticeable. And, you know, during the day you're looking for smoke, but if you're at night, you sometimes you'll see a glow where there wouldn't, you know, you would never see it during the day, and you can try and concentrate on it. The other big thing is if you have a fire, always make sure you have an ability to put it out. So plenty of water, sand, something you can put it out. Make sure it's cold before you leave. And this is a really interesting one. And this is one I know you've done. I know I've done it. Get ready to go to bed at night. It's late. You go down, you get your 2 or 3 gallon bucket, you fill it with water, you pour it all over the fire. You go down, you say, oh, it's pretty out, but I'll throw a bit more on. You throw a bit more on, you get it going pretty good. You maybe stir ashes a tiny bit. You go to bed. The next morning you wake up and there's a smoldering fire outside.
Yeah, just because the heat that was stored in the stones around it, or potentially the charcoal, or whatever the case, the heat was able to evaporate that water off and still have enough residual heat left that it kind of starts a smolder. And I mean, if you're just camping, that's one thing. You notice it in the morning, you can, you know, take your appropriate precautions or re-put it back out. But that becomes exceptionally dangerous if you're just dousing the fire and then you're moving on.
Yeah. Well, that's what I wanted to point out. I mean, this for me has only happened when I've had larger fires that I was running for a while, so the ash bed was actually quite large. A quick one that you might have for lunch for the entire thing could probably be contained within a small bowl. That is a method I've found too, is a big steel bowl that was really popular with search and rescue for a while. And you take the bowl, you have the entire fire in the bowl, and the bowl reflects the heat in, so it's extremely efficient. There's a lot of advantages to it. And the beauty is when you're done with it, you can take the whole bowl, ashes and everything, and dump into a lake or a body of water and make sure the entire thing's out and minimize the potential of starting a fire. You also want to avoid what I call flankers, some people call sparks. So anything that creates little tiny pieces that float out of your fire embers, if you put something in the fire and it does like that, and spruce boughs was one that I know is famous for it. Nice dry spruce bough, you light that thing up, goes up like gasoline, if not hotter. But the amount of little red floaties that come out of it and go for 3-4 minutes when it's out, that lands in the right place, and now you have a second fire.
And that's generally, when it comes to forest fires, what causes them to spread. Like if you have one main fire and then all of a sudden another fire creeps up somewhere else, it's called fire branding. That's exactly what happens. All that stuff that's still burning and floats into the air just lands somewhere else, and then sometimes it can accumulate and create another fire. Sometimes it only takes a spark. We see this a lot on forest fires on houses in around like the gutters of on people's roofs. enough stuff will fall on the roof, then it'll kind of fall into the gutter, and then it'll set the roof on fire.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a serious thing by far. But, yeah, if you're having a fire and it's dry and, well, hey, if it's really dry, don't have a fire. But if you're having a fire and then you think it might be a bit dry, but they're still allowed to have a fire by the warning, even take a look at your immediate area. Is this area the same as absolutely everywhere else? Because you could have dry spots where the majority of the province is still fairly damp. So if you're in an area that seems dry, you know, maybe go to somewhere else that's a little bit more secure. Make sure you're having it in an area. Keep an eye on the wind. If the wind's going out over the lake, much better than if it's going right into the woods. Things like that. Little things make a big difference. And when you do have a fire, always be aware of it. You can't leave that thing unattended for any length of time.
The benefit to all of this, or whatever you want to call it, is generally when it's this dry, it's warm. So a lot of times the fire is going to be for comfort more than staying warm, or for light, or for cooking. And for a lot of these things, you can find substitutes. You don't necessarily have to make an open fire to cook on. I mean, it's always nice when you're out camping, you know, provided they haven't banned going into the woods like they have here. But if you're out camping, it's always nice to have a fire. It's kind of one of the first things I look to make while I'm out camping. No, I'm not going to lie. But in a situation like this, if I was able to go out camping, I couldn't have an open flame. Kind of getting to your question here, Danny, I would probably take my butane stove or my propane stove or some sort of closed circuit stove. I probably wouldn't go with my alcohol stove just simply because there's a, you know, a little more risk for something happening there. Both my butane and propane stove have tip over shutoffs. It's just a little ball inside a valve, and when it tips over, generally cuts the flow of gas, and then they'll put themselves out. That way they can't just flip over and start a fire. That's where I'd hesitate on an alcohol stove, because if it fell over for whatever reason, gust of wind, I knocked it over. If the alcohol falls out, then I have this big, you know, wash of flames going down. So yeah, that's something you can do there, Danny. Instead of doing like an open flame setup, you could move to a propane style stove, much as like you're asking. Funny enough, right now they're even asking people, if they're not required to, please don't barbecue. They don't want you using charcoal pits. They prefer just not barbecuing anything at all, because it's so hot people are actually setting their barbecues on fire and stuff now too. So oh man, it's a desperate situation over here.
Well, in Nova Scotia's situation right now, they don't, you can't really afford to have firefighters fighting another fire. So anything that heightens the risk of a fire, regardless of whether it's in the woods or not, is a bigger deal. Because if you have a barbecue and it creates a small fire in your yard, they may not get someone to you as quick as you'd like. And by the time they do, maybe two or three of your neighbors also are now looking for new homes. So, you know, probably be best to be as safe as possible. Fire pits. A few years ago, we had a dry spell. We had the cabin, and we couldn't have fires at the cabin. And that's exactly what we bought, because we could control. We can have that literally on our a wooden deck. I mean, be awful careful with it, but
a propane fire pit, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, because once again, the big thing with open flame fires, which we've already kind of discussed, is the fuel has a chance to fall out and away and roll away, or you get firebrands or you know, embers, whatever you want to call them. Usually with propane stuff, you don't get most of that, and they have the safety features in them. So right now, I don't know what the story is here for propane fire pits, but I'm going to assume they're still very frowned upon at the moment. The only saving grace is hopefully we're getting like a week's worth of rain here in a few days, and everybody's just trying to hold out for that. We're literally like on eggshells holding our breath. But yeah, if you get into a situation, you're out there, you're still allowed to camp, but you can't have a fire. Some of these closed circuit fire systems are actually really good. You got a good one too there, Ben. It's that multi-fuel Whisper Light, I think.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's a great system, because now not only can you burn several different types of fuel, it's still kind of like a closed circuit system. So, yeah. And if anybody was wondering, that's it right there. And it comes with an naphtha bottle, and it's still a closed circuit system. So it's not like burning fuel, which it, you know, severely limits that risk of it getting away from you.
But even with those, be really careful. If you got a setup on the ground, it doesn't take long for that to potentially heat the area up enough to maybe create the fire. So make sure you're putting it somewhere that's basically fireproof. A method I have used that kind of helps is even a small aluminum tray you can sit it on. Mm-hmm. Something that can kind of, you know, prevents a piece of dirt or something from flicking up, catching fire. It just creates that little barrier. And then when you finish, make sure you touch underneath it, make sure it's not any warm or anything weird. But yeah, that's something you can do. It doesn't, you know, even with this one here, there's a scary point when you're lighting it where you kind of have the whole thing on fire, right? Because you have to prime it.
It has to heat prime.
Right? And that priming, if done incorrectly, is a good opportunity to start a fire that you didn't intend to, right? Yes, you're trying to start the fire in your stove, but what if it creates a fire somewhere else? That would be unfortunate. So, you know, take extra care in these times, especially when you are lighting a fire of any type, to make sure that it's absolutely the safest as possible.
And I guess to follow that note up, if you do have a fire, even if there's no fire bans, but you know, just from yourself being out in the woods and things like that, if it's starting to get drier, if you're walking around on moss and it's crunchy, it's probably starting to get dry enough that you need to be concerned. So if you do have a fire, allow a little extra time at the end of your burning period to monitor that fire and ensure that it is out 100%. So you don't have that, you walk away and it starts to smolder. So maybe you drown it once and twice, you mix it up, and then go pack up your stuff, which could take another 15, 30 minutes, and then hit the fire two more times. Douse it, mix it, douse it a fourth time. And that might be all that it takes to prevent that from going away. Just be extra cognitive. It's not that the majority of people feel us as bushcrafters out there in the woods are irresponsible. It's just sometimes people get in hurries and they miss little things, the inconsistencies, you know what I mean? And that's, you just got to try and train yourself to be more. That's not going to sound right. I'm going to say more inconsistent in the inconsistencies, but more consistent on preventing the inconsistencies when you're putting out your fires and stuff like that. Don't assume, oh yeah, it's out. Sit on it. Take the extra 10, 15 minutes, sit on it. I mean, especially if it's early morning. Because a lot of fires, including forest fires, they'll seem like they're out. Like there's no activity first thing in the morning because the humidity's up, temperature's down, everything's still kind of sitting, and it's just, you know, very, very lightly smoldering. But then as the sun comes up, the relative humidity drops, you get a little of that extra heat going around, probably a breeze picking up. That's when things are going to start flaring up. So if you do have a fire the night before and you know things are dry, don't plan on leaving immediately first thing in the morning. Maybe if that is your plan, well, then you shut your fire down good and early the day before. That way when you wake up, it's all good and checked. But maybe you plan to leave, you know, around noon, because that's generally going to be the warmer part of the day, somewhere between, you know, noon and two. Generally, that's when your wind is going to be at its peak as well, whichever direction it happens to be coming from. And that way, you're going to truly see if that fire is 100% out. And yes, it sounds like a lot of work, because it is a lot of work and time, more specifically. But sometimes that's just the price you pay. You know what I mean? I encourage people to have fires and enjoy themselves, providing they're responsible. And you're allowed to do it, of course.
And you're allowed, yeah. 100%.
Got to put that caveat in there.
Well, now or never, yeah. What else? So that's, I think we've covered, maybe not exclusively, but we've covered a lot of what we wanted to talk about. How to be sort of safer with the fire, how fires could start. Something else I would like to cover maybe a little bit. What happens if there is a fire?
Well, I guess there's two scenarios in that. Let's talk about each scenario specifically, if this sounds good to you, Ben. Because there's a scenario where your fire gets out of control and it's now a problem. Or the second scenario is a fire moves in on you that you weren't expecting. And you kind of handle them in two different ways. So which one do you want to tackle first? And then let's just dive into it.
I guess start off with your fire.
So if it's your fire, once again, you kind of refer back a little bit. Hopefully you can mediate those things. But let's say, you know, poop hit the fan, a big gust of wind. And this is a common one. People take the time, they build their fires on rocks, all that good stuff. But a big gust of wind, just, you know, a big gust out of the blue that hadn't been through all through the day because the wind's shifting. This generally happens towards evening. All of a sudden, flips your fire around, blows embers in a direction you weren't expecting. And that's where the fire gets away from you. So let's run with that scenario because it's pretty realistic in my mind because I've been to several fires that have started that way.
Yeah.
So, providing the fire got away from you, hopefully you have some sort of water source near you and you can potentially self-extinguish that fire. And I mean, that's ideal. You know what I mean? And I know that sounds like a no-brainer, but let's start with that point. If you can self-extinguish that fire, please leave that door open. It's so hot. Mel came in for a drink. I know, that's that one.
I'm dying.
Just turning my fan on. Sorry, folks. Anyway, yeah, so self-extinguish is always the first rung on the ladder. So let's assume you attempted to do that. You had a bucket, you have your pot, you throw some water on it, you get that fire out. Providing you were successful in putting the fire out, don't just count your blessings right away. Much like we talked about with the fire previously, continue to monitor it. If you had a fire that unexpectedly got away from you, your plans have now changed when you're in the woods, or at least they should change some. Now you have to bring into account, hey, there's the potential for a forest fire here. I'm the only one that's close enough to monitor this. As a good bushcrafter and hopefully just a good person, the little bit of responsibility now falls on you to, you know, you have to maintain that. So now not only do you have to put it out, monitor it, make sure it's not going to reflare back up, much like you just did, we were talking about before. But because it's a bigger area, that may mean you need to sit on it a little longer. Or in worst case scenario, if you can't stay and sit on it, report it when you get back. I don't know. Yeah. Sounds counterproductive. A lot of people are like, oh, I'm not going to turn myself in. But if there's no fire bans and there's no problems, generally your natural resources offices or your renewable resources, whatever you want to call them, they're not going to give you a hard time. They're going to be thankful that they at least know there was a situation there. They may send somebody out to check it out, or at the very least, they may put that pin on their map and know to, like, the next time, for instance, here in Nova Scotia, we have aerial surveys. The next time an aerial survey goes through, they may take a little extra time in that known area.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like you said, it is possible you could get the fire going out. I was honestly even thinking, what if you can't? So the fire, you know, the wind blows up, it hits the trees, maybe say it's a lot of birch or something, kind of gets out of hand, you grab your buckets, you're starting throwing fire water onto the fire, it just doesn't seem to be doing any good. It's driving you back. At this point, you got two things you need to do. One, you need to stay safe yourself. And two, you need to report this as soon as possible. So if you can call right away and say, listen, this is what happened. This is where I'm to. Maybe they can send a helicopter with a Bambi bucket. Maybe they can send some other options to you. But at least they're aware of it and they can start to deal with it as soon as possible. The other thing is, like I said, keeping yourself safe. You now have to look around once this has started getting and make sure you have an escape plan. And you should always have an escape plan if you're fighting a fire. And I have never fought a fire, but I would assume the first thing they teach people is when you're fighting a fire, always have an escape plan.
So I won't go too far into it because we've done episode this on the past and it was a great episode and it taught you a lot of stuff. But an acronym to remember if you are going to attempt putting out a small fire, and I don't encourage anyone to try and attempt fighting a forest fire. But anyway, something we use as an acronym is LACES, or which is your lookouts, anchor points, see, communications, escape routes, and safety zones. But the big ones are your escape routes and safety zones, in all honesty. Have a way to get out of there, and then once you're out of there, have someplace that it's safe until somebody can get you or, you know, conditions change. And there's the history's riddled with stories of people that had great escape routes, but then they led them right into disaster. So kind of keep both those things in mind. And I guess backtracking on that a little bit more is, as Ben mentioned, you know, the flames are starting to get away from you. The big thing to realize is don't wait too long on calling for additional help. It's far better to call the help. And when they get there, be like, oh guys, I got it out myself, but I was just worried. Then be like, oh, I wish I had a call just, you know, like 15 minutes sooner.
Yeah.
You guys can just given on this topic. Okay, Chris Loveless, is there an episode of your show that you guys discuss camping in a thunderstorm? I know it's not fire-based, but a lot of awesome information to be given on this topic. Not specifically. If that's something you want in the future, Chris, we could probably throw something together. I mean, if you put all our episodes together, I'm sure we've talked about it with stories and whatnot, but we could talk about that at length at some other time if you like.
I know we've covered different inclement weather, and we've probably loosely mentions thunderstorms as part of it. We could definitely do one in storms specifically. We've talked to hurricanes too. I think kind of continuing on a little bit, like you said, always have an escape route. And like when you're, if you're out there and you find out that there is a fire and there's a fire in your area, so say you have a radio or someone calls you, it's a pretty good idea to get out of that area and not sit there and say, oh, it's further away, it's not going to bother me, because it could very well be cutting across your path, or it could be separating you from your vehicle or your route of escape. So if you're in the woods and there is a forest fire and you find out about it, it is probably best to not be in the woods and not be in the area. Because one thing is, you can add to the effort that fire people have to go through. Because part of what they're going to have to do is evacuate the area. And if they're looking for people because they know there are people back there, that means they're not fighting the fire. They're now, you know, some people are, but not as many as they could have. So good courtesy is, if you're in an area and there's something like this undergo, get out and not add to confusion and effort.
Don't add to complication, 100%. And I guess, when it comes to escape routes, what are things you should look for? Obviously not running towards the fire. Don't try to go uphill, because as most of us can probably imagine here, fire travels uphill faster. So the next thing would be, okay, I'll run downhill. Keep in mind that's not necessarily your best option either, because depending on the size of the fire, like the things that are going now, if you're running down the hill in front of this by a couple hundred feet, you can get a lot of stuff rolling down those hills from the fire, burning off trees, stuff like that. They fall, they roll, and now you're in an obstacle course also trying to outrun a fire. I mean, there is no best answer to this, unfortunately, folks. It's one of those things you're going to have to weigh your options when you're there and try and make the best decisions you can at the time. Big thing, don't wait, as Ben said. The quicker you can get your buttocks moving, the better off you're going to be, not just for the firefighters that are out there fighting this fire, but for your own safety as well.
Yeah.
And I guess on the other note of this is, if you have the availability, a lot of people would say, oh, you run into the river. It depends on the size of the fire. Like, if it's your only option, okay, it's better than no option at all. But keep in mind, once again, pulling one of these fires, or like a fire from out west around you, Ben, or something like that, these, you're talking of like 100-foot flame fronts that are taking a few minutes to burn over, and just sitting in a river, it's not going to protect you. The amount of heat going around you is still going to burn you. So, okay, I'll hide under the water. Chances are you're going to drown before that fire fully passes over. And if you don't, and you break the surface to try and get a breath of air, you're going to be inhaling potentially air that's in excess of like 3,000 degrees or something, like, not 3,000. Yeah. I'm thinking Fahrenheit, but let's say over 1,000 degrees. And it's basically just going to roast your lungs immediately. And this is all providing the smoke doesn't get you first. Yeah. 99% of fatalities in fires, house, forest, or otherwise, is not from the fire itself. It's from succumbing to the smoke.
I mean, crossing water might slow the fire down. Staying in the water is never a good idea. But even then, I have seen, I'm sure you have seen, fire jump 50, 60 feet.
50, 60 feet? I've seen it jump 2-3 kilometers. Porter's Lake fire, once again, burning on one side of the lake. The lake is almost 2 kilometers wide, and it jumped to the other side of the lake. Fire branding, once again, it just rained down over there and created a whole other fire. So to answer your question there, Chris, which just popped up. Is the heat high enough to feel in the middle of a large body of water? Depends on the size of the fire. Depends on the size of the body of water. You know what I mean? It's not ideal to be anywhere near the head of a fire, regardless of how big it is or how big the body of water is. If you can have any other option, get your ass out of there. If it's your only option, I mean, it is your only option. It's better than no options. It's, I don't want to say this to sound morbid, but if it's a big fire and a small body of water, it's not great chances, but it's better than zero. But yeah, and once again, going with the Porter's Lake fire here, the heat was, we were on an island in the middle of all of this, and you could 100% feel the heat from, you know, the other side of the lake hitting you. It was incredibly warm. Were we getting burned? No. But as the firebrands rained down, it did create a fire on the island we were on, and as I said, across the entire lake itself. So, you might be okay. You might get smoke asphyxiation. Or you could just get firebrands constantly raining down on you, which in and of itself can create you a lot of problems, especially if you don't have a lot of way to keep them off you. They can collect on you and start burning you as well.
Yeah. I should ask, because I think you probably have a better number, but how fast can a fire move? I've been told like 80, 90 kilometers an hour is not unheard of.
Once again, depends on so many factors, Ben. It depends on the type of materials it's burning. Is it hardwood? Is it softwood? Is it slash? Is it grasses? Is there wind blowing? How long has it been burning? How dry is the stuff around there? I mean, there's no good answer to it, but 100 kilometers an hour? It's not unheard of. Big fire, but not unheard of. I mean, they move fast.
So, I mean, they build themselves up. They get so hot, and then the wind goes behind them, and they go to... they spread, and that heat kind of concentrates, and it just creates this cascade. Until they run out of fuel or something steals it, it just keeps growing at a faster and faster rate in a lot of ways, until, like I said, if something slows it down or causes it. So you're not necessarily going to be able to easily outrun a fire, and this is why you really want to be as far away from a fire as possible and make sure that there's a lot of stuff between you and fire that's going to keep you safe. Years ago, one of my brother had been in Fort Mac when it burned, and he got evacuated. He used to tell me he could see the fire in his rear view mirror as he drove away from it. And that was a traumatizing thing for him. And I know, you know, hundreds of other people have it. Chris has mentioned something about one of his fears is getting stuck in a forest fire.
It's not a great feeling. It's not a great feeling, man. Right?
But I think it's a very natural and normal fear to have, and it's a very healthy fear to have. We should not want to be there.
I mean, to tell a little personal story about this, and I'm not going to give too much information, but there has been instances in my career as a firefighter where we got into a bad situation. They basically told us, like, we can't get anything to you. We wish you the best of luck. And it's not a good place to be, you know what I mean? Like, it's a bad feeling. And I mean, as a firefighter, it's one of the things you take on, one of the risks you can potentially take on. And I mean, we're highly trained, quote unquote, to do our jobs. And imagine going in and having little to no training and trying to do this and getting stuck in a fire. You know what I mean? Like, I couldn't even imagine the amount of panic that would be involved in that. And as you start to panic and fear sets in, you start making mistakes. Little mistakes add up to big mistakes. And then all of a sudden, big mistakes equal fatal mistakes, unfortunately. So it's just not a situation to get into.
So if we were to sum tonight up, and I kind of really want to do this time, the lessons learned, what do we most want you to take from this is when you are having fires in the woods, be as careful as possible. If you are unsure, don't have a fire. If you're unsure that you can have a fire safely, don't have a fire. That would be a lesson learned. I would love it for everyone to take it. And I'm going to repeat that because I think it's that important. If you are unsure that you can have a safe fire, do not have a fire.
Exactly. Right? If you don't know if it's safe, it's probably not worth taking the chance.
If you were involved in a forest fire. Let someone know as soon as possible. And if you're fighting it, always make sure that you are safe. So you, because if you perish trying to put it fire, you're not going to help any situation. In fact, you're just adding to it. So, you know, make sure that you take care of yourself. So if you are in that situation, yes, feel free to try and put it out. If you feel that you're endangered or you feel you may not be able to escape, that is the time to really start trying to escape. Don't keep trying to fight the fire hoping, oh, I'll get past it, because what's going to happen is it's going to overwhelm you at that point. Once you get the panic feeling, it's probably already really late and you need to be acting.
If you're panicking, you shouldn't be there. It's as simple as that. You know what I mean? Keep the wind at your back. Fire's going to go against the wind slower. Not that it won't come against the wind. It'll just do it slower. And it'll keep the smoke away from you to keep you breathing a little better. Something else that I do when it gets warm, if I am going into the woods and there's potentially fire bans on, I have a chainsaw fire extinguisher, which is just a little bottle with dry chemical powder in it. It works a little bit more effectively in certain situations. But at least it's a quick thing you can get that will stagger something back enough that you may be able to get some more water on it. It's another option to have. So that's something else you may want to think about. But ultimately, as Ben said, your best option is if you're going to try and put it out, make sure it's small. And the second you start wondering, should I be here? That's your body telling you shouldn't be there. You know what I mean? Listen to that instinct. Hightail it. I mean, it's unfortunate, but honestly, if you are wondering if you should be there, chances are you shouldn't, and that means you being there is most likely not going to change the outcome of whatever that's going to happen to that fire. It's just going to change the statistics on that fire, being, oh, it damaged some woods, or, oh, it damaged some woods and it caused one fatality. I know, morbid. I'm not trying to be morbid. I'm not trying to say these things, but I mean, it's reality, folks.
You said something really important, too. Don't try to run towards the fire. That being said, I want to say, if you can get to the other side of the fire and it's already burned through, the chance of the fire won't go back through a burned area. That being said, that's not 100% true. All those blackened trees that are still up there, those are now pretty dry and primed for reburns. So it may not come back there as quick, because a lot of the loose, easy-to-burn stuff is already gone, and there could be a lot of hot spots back there. But sometimes, if you can get to the burnt side and get the hell out of there, do not hang out, do not make... But if, you know, you can get around the fire, it might... And now the wind is, you know, blowing the fire away from you, that's definitely an advantage position, rather than being in front of it and trying to keep it running. Because what we said earlier is, if that fire picks up good, you are not, my friend, outrunning a fire.
The other thing about going into the black, just to keep in mind, not that you shouldn't, but keep in mind, depending on the size of this fire, being in the black, which we call it in the fire service, it's going to increase your chances of dehydration and sunstroke. Once again, not a bad option if it's compared against burning to death, don't get me wrong. But realize if you run into the black, because of all the heat that's been soaked into there, you're basically slow roasting yourself. I mean, there's a lot of coals and embers and stuff still going through there holding water residual heat. Chances are it's now burnt black, which is also absorbing a lot more UV heat and stuff like that. It can lead to some other conditions, but it's also one of those things. Take care of the immediate life-threatening conditions and then kind of take your time and follow up the next emergency as seen fit.
Yeah. Step one is always to keep yourself as safe as possible. So start moving, get the hell out of there. So those are the sort of the big things. If we could tell you three things to do, you know, practice fire safety anytime you're having a fire. If it's dry, don't burn. If you're not sure you can control it, don't burn. When you do have a fire, make sure it's out before you leave it. That's something that's always preached, but I can guarantee you not everyone follows it. A lot of times people will take water, put over it, and like I said, with the fire, you can test this yourself at night. Get up next morning, shuffle around those embers, and so often you can restart a fire very easily. If you get a good breeze, blows those ashes off, there's a couple of nice charred pieces of wood in there, those will readily take a flame again, and that's a huge issue. So when you do have a fire, make sure you can, you know, make sure you put it out and make sure it's clear before you leave. if a fire does get out of control, it's always good to have methods to control the fire there. It's great that you got a bucket. It's even better if you have a bucket that's full of water next to the fire. So if something does go, throw the water on it right away. If you have to go get the water and come back, that's an extra minute that you could have had the fire under control, and it grows exponentially. That tends to be the way fire burns. It just keeps getting bigger, bigger, and bigger. It keeps spreading. And so it doesn't take long for it to be a major concern. And then absolutely last but not least, if you can't get it under control, let someone know and get the hell out of there.
The sooner you can let them know, the better. And the sooner you get your ass out of there, the better as well.
Yeah. That's the points I wanted to make. And I think we've made those.
And I think so. And I do believe, I know some people are going to be like, this is common sense. But you know what? There's no such thing as common sense. Somebody once told me it's only acquired knowledge. And that's all this is trying to do, is just refresh that knowledge. Maybe we mentioned something that you hadn't thought of before. Just be safe out there, folks. It's getting, you know, at least in my part of the world right now, it's getting pretty crazy, hazy, and honestly scary for a lot of it. You know what I mean? Like I said, a lot of people have been evacuated. Almost everybody in the province knows somebody that's been evacuated or is on an evacuation list. Most of us have family of people that have been evacuated now. My oldest kid, she's basically on evacuation standby. I mean, everybody that I used to know at Natural Resources is out fighting this fire. They're starting to call in resources from outside. It's not just you and your fire that this is potentially affecting. It could be thousands of people and property and lives and livestock and animals. I mean, once again, this one in Tintowan, they're not letting people back in to open their barns and stuff because it was just unsafe. I know that sounds horribly cruel, don't get me wrong, but at the same time, it just was not safe to go back. If they had to let people go back in to try and open these barns and stuff like that, they were literally letting them run to their deaths. So they weren't trying to be weigh animal life over human life. It was just there was no helping the situation at that point. The good news is a lot of these animals did get rescued. The fire shifted on the second day, and it kind of whipped back on itself, and it got the smoke away, and they were able to save a significant amount of stuff. But anyway, the reality is it affects so many things. Sorry, I kind of rambled there for a sec, Ben, and cut you off, and I apologize.
No, good information. The only thing, you said, like, it affects a lot of people. This is literally affecting people from multiple provinces. I mean, I'm clear across the country. I have been affected by this because friends and family and coworkers and former coworkers, whatever you want to call them, have been directly involved. My previous employer has been directly involved in this, as far as I know. So, it really does affect people. But also, I know Newfoundland most likely has some of their water bombers in Nova Scotia.
Yeah, they're fighting their own fire now, too. And so is New Brunswick. So we're surrounded, man.
So it's a big deal. Like, so when this stuff comes, and this is it, like if the resources from a different province aren't available because they're fighting their own fires, then right now Nova Scotia could be on its own, or we're pulling from even further away. And when you pull a resource from somewhere else, then they're left without the protection that they've, you know, paid for and expect to have. So, yeah, it does affect them. It means people will be away from their families for quite a while. It means entire careers, or not careers, but like industries may be stunted for years, because there's just not, you know, hunting, fishing, the lumber industry in general. So much more that's just going to be changed and affected by this, right?
And something that's going to be a little closer to home for some people, maybe, it's just the cost of living. The cost of living is going to be driven up in these areas now because there's going to be less houses, which is going to put a greater demand on the people that have been displaced, which means they're now going to put the prices up. I mean, the cost of living is going to go up in these areas simply because of, you know, demand. Well, you mentioned that this is affecting other provinces. We're affecting other countries. The smoke from this fire was actually causing air quality control issues in Boston. They had alerts there trying to keep people inside because the smoke coming down from there was, you know, causing so much problems with people with, like, lung problems, asthma, you know, other things like that.
I mean, the economic, like you said, it's going to affect the cost of living, housing prices, because more people will be looking for the same few places. It's going to cause probably increase in job opportunities to rebuild for a lot of these houses. But then again, a lot of the lumber that we may have been able to produce within province will now be crispy and not useful. So now we're going to be importing that stuff from outside.
Not to mention they can't even start building until all this area is cleaned up.
Yeah. So you're talking, you know, Hammonds Plains area could be 2 or 3 years before a lot of these houses even get started, let alone finished. So it's going to have a huge effect. Some industries, some businesses that were running there may not be able to open for another year or two.
But some of them just won't survive. A lot of small independent businesses, they just won't have a second crack at the can. So, I mean, I guess long story short, never just say, oh, this fire is only going to affect me. Think, hopefully, your little forest fire, or your little forest fire, oh, goodness, your little campfire is only going to stay contained to you. But in the event that it got away, it could potentially have long-reaching and long-lasting effects. So, once again, as Ben said, the major point of this is if you don't think it's safe to burn, or if you have to question if you can have a fire, just don't have the fire. This time of year, hopefully you're not freezing to death. There's other options to get you light, heat, things like that. Even if you want to have a little camp, not a campfire, but like, you know, a bonfire at home or something like that, maybe a propane pit would be a better idea. I think right now, like I said, they may not even want those burning in our province just in case it got away. Like, it's literally to the point where I expect to see don't fart outside because they're scared that's going to create something.
There are devices that you can use to help offset it, why you would have a fire. So a good lantern, and you can get electric lanterns that don't, LED style, don't produce a lot of heat, are pretty safe. So light is one thing we look for. The other thing is heat. So an emergency blanket or a good wool blanket to cover yourself to keep warm. You can still enjoy being inside without a fire. Is it the same? No, it's definitely not. But like you said, contained stoves can help. You know, the body warmers, a couple of those into your clothing during a chilly night. There are things you can do to make sure you're still comfortable without having the fire. So it's doable. So just don't think you have to have a fire to enjoy the outside when you are. So even if you're in your backyard and you just want to be out because you don't want to be in the house, you can be in your backyard without a campfire. There are methods. So something to keep in mind.
Yep, for sure. And I mean, that's pretty much all I wanted to say too. I went on a few rambles there, but I at least tried to keep it relevant this time.
Awesome. Anyways, I think it's an important topic. It may not have been the most exciting or most exciting, or you know, the topic that we mostly wanted to hear right now, but I think it's a time required one, because right now it is a big deal. Like, so there's fires in most of the Maritimes right now, so, or Atlantic provinces. So
yeah, it's, and I think it's going to be the new norm, unfortunately, and it's going to be folks like me and like Ben and like you listening to us out there that's really going to have to step up and watch what we're doing when we're out in the woods. That way we can continue to do it for future or into the future.
That is a really good point. I mean, we're not accusing any bushcraft or outdoors enthusiast of starting these fires. That is not what we're saying. But if we want to have that reputation, if we want to continue doing this, we do not want to bring the spotlight onto us by doing something that does cause these problems, because they will crack down. If every year they're putting out a forest fire and it's blamed on a bushcrafter, the next thing you know, bushcrafting is not a thing. You can't camp because we're not trusted to do it. So, and that'll just create fights everywhere. So, you know, for sure, 100%. Take care of yourselves. Take care of your friends. Take care of your family. Be safe. I would say get out there and have fun, because that's what we always say, but right now, stay home.
Depending on where you're at, that may not be the best idea right now.
I might get out there and have fun. You guys stay home, stay safe. And if I'm in that situation, I will definitely be staying home and staying safe. I will not be adding to the problem for others, as much as I would enjoy being able to get out and do stuff. So that's what I want to leave with. You know, stay safe, everyone. Stay safe. Take care of yourselves. Take care of those around you.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Night all.